Welcome to the Solomon's Corner podcast. Merry Christmas to you all, as this is our last and final episode for the year. Today, we talk about the Twitter files and why you should care. We also talk about how demons are getting involved into fashion and why you should care about that as well. Also, we talk about who is the bigger threat, the Democrats or Trump? And what does all of this have to do with the intellectual life? All this and more on today's Solomon's Corner podcast.
Welcome to the Solomon's Corner podcast, a place for thinkers. Join us as we explore the depths of theology, philosophy, and the Christian intellectual life.
Are we good?
Yes.
Okay. I got in trouble. I'm not supposed to talk during the intro music. I don't know if you guys can tell, but we're kind of feeling like we're going to be a little bit relaxed on this episode of Solomon's Corner. So, don't judge us too hard. But, for those of you who do not know, we have a lot of you, quite a few actually, that are subscribed to the podcast, the audio version of this show. We would love for you to join us on YouTube, where you can look at my beautiful face, and occasionally my wife's beautiful face, but she only comes in and out every now and then. She doesn't really jump in all that often. So, but if you like full-grown beard, you know, you like a nice bushy face, you know, you want to see some pens, you know, we can do that. I'm not going to show it off yet, so you can keep drinking your water, Lindsay. It's going to be fine. But before we dive into all these fun little topics, we have to give a shout out to all of you Spotify listeners out there, because you've been kicking butt in terms of getting our podcast out there. So even though this is on YouTube and Rumble, we have an awesome graphic here that in the run-through for this episode, I misspoke, which was one of the reasons why we're redoing this episode. Not that we couldn't have handled it in post-production, but, you know, you get the idea. So you look at this screenshot here at Solomon's Corner on Twitter, which is the place to be these days, as we will find out, for truth and all things crazy. But we are a small outfit, but we wouldn't be anything without our listeners, specifically the Spotify listeners. Thanks everyone for your support in 2022. Looking forward to even more fun next year. Hashtag keep thinking. So we were in the 10% most shared globally on this podcast, and it's a little blurry, so I can't see it all, but I think a lot of you guys were sending it out direct link, which I don't even know what that means, so maybe that's just a vanity metric for you marketing gurus out there. But a lot of you sending it out via text message. All right, look at that. A little direct evangelism there. We really appreciate that. So now you Facebookers out there, you're down there in the 1%. So let's step up the game. You can do it, all right? I know we're not as edgy as those Daily Wire guys, you know, but would be really nice if we could get that bumped up maybe to 2%. Okay? That's all I'm asking. Anyway. Need more than just my mom sharing it out there on the Facebookers. All right. So we're going to dive right in here. Again, thank you for all that. And I think we're going to definitely do some contests for some pens before we dive into the Twitter files and stuff. That's the other thing I needed to say. I got more announcements. I'm sorry, guys. We are taking the rest of the month off for... So this is our last episode, in case you missed it. This is our last episode for Christmas. Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, that's as low as it can go. Yeah, we're going to just have to deal with it. Sorry, guys. Blue-eyed, brown-haired. So, what we are... Before I was rudely interrupted, some women just don't know their place in the house. Mine is no exception, but that's what feminism did to us boys. So, we were neutered, and Eve got our power. So... Anyway, as I was saying, we need more shares on the social media. So if you are wondering how you can help us before we launch our e-store, obviously money helps when you go and buy a pen, but it would also be great if we could get more shares out there on the old Twitterverse. So make sure you're following us at Solomon's Corner, because I'm going to say just a hunch that if we do any giveaways, anything related to sharing or virality or any of that kind of stuff, it's going to be on Twitter. So make sure you've got a Twitter account, it can be anonymous. You know, we can always, you know, DM you and find out where we need to send the pen or whatever. But if you want to make sure that you are up on the up and up with all of our giveaways, make sure you are on Twitter and you are following at Solomon's Corner. You can also follow me at Thomistic Dan, and that'll be coming in and out throughout this show. So we're going to dive into the Twitter files. Like I said, this is going to be a little bit more off the cuff. It's the end of the year. We're kind of getting some senioritis. Haven't used that word in like 20 years, but that's the closest thing I can think of. It's like, man, we just got a huge final dropped on us by a professor, Dr. Elon Musk, and he dropped it on us right here at the end of the year. Just had to let it out there so that everybody who is ready to just kind of wrap up the end of the year for their podcast, especially these little baby ones that are just getting started, just had to stick it out there, Twittergate. So for those of you that don't know, I'm not going to dive deep into this because I know that all of the major, huge, huge outlets covered this, from Dan Bongino to Michael Knowles, Ben Shapiro, everybody was talking about it. So I'm assuming that most of you probably have heard about this at this point, what it actually entailed. I'm going to just show you some of the highlights of what I thought was the worst parts, but we're not going to spend a ton of time analyzing them because everybody did that already. And I'm pretty sure that our drop rate's going to be pretty high if we go quote by quote from Matt Taibbi. Just a couple of things is that he's a liberal journalist that Elon Musk gave the Twitter files to. There is more coming. Apparently there is a Twitter space starting tomorrow at 6 a.m. to kind of monitor Twitter with a bunch of users that are going to be looking at, you know, what the second drop is going to entail. Most of this drop was just about the Democrats. And I think it's really important for us to talk about because a lot of people are just kind of like, oh, whatever, who cares? And Trump didn't do anybody any favors by making it all about him. But, you know, that's kind of what he does. So not a helpful thing because now everybody's mainstream news is all about Trump wants to burn the Constitution. So we'll get into that later. But there were two tweets that basically came out of this that were really, really concerning. And you can go and we'll have them in the show notes. We'll have the thread. So that if you want to go and read it yourself, you can. But Matt Taibbi is basically the first one I want to talk about is the handled response, Lindsay, instead of the Bill of Rights. So I'm going to flip it around because I think it'll give more context. So if you can bring that up real quick. Thank you. So essentially right here, you have this Matt Taibbi guy. I've never read any of his stuff. Found out today actually that he's a liberal Democrat guy who's, you know, not on the GOP side or any of that, and he is getting lambasted by his own group for even running this story on his Twitter profile. And what you have here is basically we can read it out. It starts at tweet number 7. There were like 43. He says, slowly over time, Twitter staff and executives began to find more and more uses for these tools. These tools being suppression tools that were typically reserved for child pornography, things like, and financial fraud and things like that. But they would be able to block direct messages. They would be able to suppress accounts. They would be able to censor things because what a lot of people don't understand that aren't in the tech world is that the speech issue is a lot more complicated in the digital space than it is in the public space in the physical world, because part of the idea of freedom of speech is that you're actually putting skin in the game. And one of the things that's a problem on the digital spaces is that you can become a fraudster much more easily, and you can do illegal things much more easily because it has built-in anonymity. So we're not going to dive into that on this podcast, maybe down the road. If you want me to, put in the comments below freedom of speech and tech. I think it's a good topic to discuss. But the bottom line is that they developed these tools with good intent in order to squash bad things. And then they realized that they had a secondary application. So this is what Taibbi is referring to. So these tools, they started realizing they could use them for other things. Outsiders, people outside of Twitter, began to petition Twitter to manipulate speech as well. First a little, then more often, and then constantly. By 2020, requests from connected actors to delete tweets were routine. One executive would write to another, quote, more to review from the Biden team, end quote, and the reply would come back handled. So in this tweet, you've got several different Twitter profiles. I don't know if you can see it right there, but basically they've given the URLs, just like we would post in any of our articles. And then they send them to the Twitter team, and the Twitter team would go there, and then they would look at them, and then they would shut them down. Now, one of the things we're going to talk about later is people's love of talking about 1984 while simultaneously acting like Trump is a bigger threat to freedom in America, which is questionable. Because if we read George Orwell or we read any of these other guys, what they constantly refer to as the problem is the party. And the party is the ideology that everybody gets behind, regardless of label. So in 1984, you have war with Eurasia. You have war with Westphalia, I think it is. So there's obviously different groups that you have. Am I right on that? Is it Westphalia?
There's Eurasia, East Asia.
Oceania. I don't know where I got Westphalia. But anyway, the point is there's three other countries. So obviously there's different nominal groups. So the point is, though, on this section right here is that you now have actual demonstrated corruption with government officials using companies, which we already knew was going on for any of us who have actually been online right now, actually working to suppress the speech of other people. And one of the things Elon Musk, we don't have the tweet, but he said, you know, there's nothing wrong with Twitter shutting down accounts or using its own First Amendment rights to do it. However, it becomes a problem when the government says, hey, since you have the ability to suppress speech, can you do us a solid and actually suppress these guys? That would be great. Thanks. That's a problem. And Ted Cruz also talked about it too on his Verdict podcast. Everybody's talking about that aspect because there's some misunderstanding about whether or not it's actually wrong or right. So the second tweet that's really bad is the Bill of Rights is not absolute tweet, which is, I think, like number 37 or something like that. 36. I was close. So this is disturbing. So this is in the middle of an exchange in which Sabo, who is he's at a different company. I think it's like Net Security or something like that, but he's a third party, I believe, involved with this. And he talks about basically what Democratic lawmakers' attitudes are about the Bill of Rights. And I don't really care about Sabo as much as what he is relaying to people internally at Twitter about the Hunter Biden laptop story and freedom of speech. And this says, starting in the second paragraph, so not the first paragraph, that's a whole bunch of stuff about Hillary Clinton's emails and some other stuff that I don't really think actually matters for what we're talking about right now. In the second paragraph, he says, quote, the Democrats were in agreement. Social media needs to moderate more because they're corrupting democracy and making all truth relative. When pushed on how the government might insist on that, consistent with the First Amendment, the Democrats demurred, that's the they, the First Amendment isn't absolute. Well, that's a problem. Because your human rights are absolute. That's why they're called a human right. They're immutable. You can't have them taken away. Even if you're in a country where they do not allow you to have freedom of speech, what they mean is that you will be punished for speaking. The reason why they punish you is because they can't take away your speech. So it's fundamental to your existence as a human being. They can pass laws that restrict it if they wanted to, and that'd be wrong, but it's not actually something that's mutable, something that's changeable. Like, you can speak out even if it's illegal. That's why they punish you, is because that's their only recourse. So it's something that you should have actually absolutely. And again, tech companies and stuff, they are permitted to use their censorship to squash things like child pornography, squash things like, you know, violence or threats. The problem is that this was all lopsided. And it was very much in favor for the Democrats and not so much for anybody who is conservative or, you know, has a name of Shapiro. So at the end of the day, this is really problematic and you should care because there's a lot of people out there who just, oh, well, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. After all, you know, communism won't happen here. It's not going to happen. 1984 isn't supposed to be a handbook. It's supposed to be, you know, a warning. And we've got the warning and we all know and we're not there yet. We still got stuff. And yet they look at China and they say, well, this is scary. Look at all that stuff. They've got quarantine camps and things like that. And if you looked at any of the bills, they had executive orders during COVID-19 to actually allow for building of quarantine camps at the state level. Some of these were conservative governors. So we're a lot closer than I think people realize. But even more so, what's really damning about this story is the fact that you've got clips now going around Twitter of the presidential debate between Trump and Biden. Because again, remember, these Twitter files were about suppressing a news article. So a journalistic article that had obtained Hunter Biden's laptop and then was going to the press and writing a story about what was on there and implicating Biden and his son in some pretty sketchy stuff. So this is what gets suppressed. And that's a problem because now people are not able to make informed decisions about who they want to be president. So when we look at who actually got involved to distract the public from this actual Hunter Biden story, it wasn't just the Democrats. It was also CIA officials, intelligence officials, who said that this was Russian disinformation. So, and that's from Biden. So we've got a clip here of how many times Biden actually went and said, no, Trump's lying, this isn't true, and I've got CIA, blah, 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 people who have said this is what it actually was. Do you have the clip? Okay, here it is.
50 former national intelligence folks who said that what this he's accusing me of is a Russian plant. They have said that this is has all the characteristics. Five former heads of the CIA, both parties, say what he's saying is a bunch of garbage.
This is classic Trump. We have 4 days left, and all of a sudden, there's a laptop. There's overwhelming evidence that from the intelligence community that the Russians are engaged.
I still think that the stories from the fall about your son, Hunter, were Russian disinformation.
Ha ha ha. So funny.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's a last-ditch effort in this desperate campaign.
Hard to talk through those masks.
My family. The vast majority of the intelligence people have come out and said there's no basis at all.
Obviously, good little marketing there from the GOP, it looks like. But clearly, this is much deeper than just some people didn't like the fact that they were making fun of Joe Biden. So this gets into another guy who's a Democrat, Alex Berenson, which if you haven't listened to the Joe Rogan interview with Alex Berenson, I highly recommend that you do, because Alex Berenson is another left-leaning or left-wing. He's not woke. He doesn't like the woke stuff. But even he said he does not want Trump to run again. And if Trump does become the nominee for the GOP, he is not going to vote for him. So he sees himself as independent, but he's pro-choice and he's got a lot of liberal left-leaning ideas, but he did not think that what was going on with COVID was above board, and he also got targeted in this stuff. Now, this hasn't come out in the Twitter files yet. This has come out in his own deposition stuff between Twitter and his suppression of his account at the behest of the Biden administration. So we've got his tweet here as well. This is Alex Berenson. You should go follow him. He has great content as well. Again, he's not going to be somebody in line with, you know, the Christian values and the virtues and morality of all across the board. But welcome to 2022. Good luck finding anybody who's in agreement on all those things. So he says, reminder, 4 months ago, I proved the Biden White House demanded in 2021 Twitter remove me, which was Jack Dorsey's Twitter. Twitter tried to decline, but finally complied with, I guess, Scott Gottlieb at Pfizer. It was involved as well. So it wasn't just the Biden administration. It was also other companies who were at risk if people suddenly had vaccine hesitancy, because obviously they want to make money off this vaccine that they warp speeded through. So at the end of the day, which, by the way, as an aside, this just really bugs me, how many people actually get all up in a tizzy about Trump and yet love the vaccines. And it's like, well, Trump was the one who had Operation Warp Speed. Like, I mean, do you really think that Biden would have come up with Operation Warp Speed? I mean, let's be honest. Okay, Operation Warp Speed. Anyway, sorry, that's my Trump impression. You got to work on those. You got to get them ready for 2023. So all this being said is, why should you actually care? What is the, why does this actually matter? And the reason why this matters is because so many people actually think that, or at least the way that the media plasters this propaganda everywhere, is that the right-wing party is the dangerous party. And every party has their psychos and weirdos and crazy people in it. This is why everybody hates it when one of their crazy people in there that claims to be part of the party actually goes and does something awful and atrocious. We all remember the times when people would go and actually bomb abortion clinics because they felt like they had a moral justification to take the lives of the abortion doctors in those clinics. And it was really bad for conservatives whenever somebody went and did that, because it didn't help the case for the pro-life cause that they were trying to get passed. It actually hurt them. Because what would happen? Everybody knew what would happen if you were a pro-life person. The moment somebody went into an abortion clinic or did something violent or whatever, there was no questioning it at all. It was, this is the problem with the right wing, blah, 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 blah. So then you've got the same thing happening on the left when the Bernie Sanders people, there was a Bernie bro or somebody like that who went and basically shot up a congressional baseball game. Well, this is not good for the Democrats. We understand that crazy people do not do good things for political advancement of your ideas, because they end up making you look like you're a crazy, dangerous party. The problem is that the Democrats are much more in line with coming as an angel of light. And so they look attractive. They look like they're nice. You know, they got a couple flaws, but nobody's perfect. That's kind of their shtick. And then they have the big tech, which what we just saw, and they have the news media on their side as well to cover all of the problems that they do. So unless you actually know that they're not for you and that they actually do suppress your rights and they actually do all this collusion, all of this stuff ends up looking like it's not that big of a deal when compared to Trump and his tweet about, or not his tweet because he's not tweeting right now, but he's truthing. He's truth. I think it's so dumb. Send your truth. It's like, man, no wonder people think you guys are pushing relativism. But the point is that when Trump posts this thing on the, I can't even stop saying it because it's just not the way you should talk about a social media post. It's not supposed to be a truth. It's supposed to be a tweet. It's supposed to be a post. Anyway, I digress. But he says this thing about how he's going to wants to rip up the Constitution or whatever. And everybody's freaking out. Yeah, did you see what Trump said? Yeah, did you see what Trump said? Yeah, that's why we have checks and balances, guys. How about we talk about the fact that, yes, Trump was wrong to say that, but let's talk about the fact that you literally had the suppression of freedom of speech, of human rights, using fascistic tactics to do that on the left, and including CIA officials being involved. Now, this brings us to the point of like why you should care. Well, number one is because you should care about the future of the next generations, your kids, your grandkids. You have to understand that America should not end with your retirement. That's number one. So you have a moral obligation to your city, to your country, to make sure that the next generation that gets to inherit this country, because that's what a country is, it's an inheritance, okay? Whoever comes in next has a better life. If you don't do that, then you're failing in your obligations. But the second thing is because this life is not all that there is. And so you should stand against evil, because if there's something that life is meant for, it is the resistance of evil, totalitarianism, and tyranny. And as Christian thinkers, or intellectual, the people who live the intellectual life, we should be aiming for pursuing the truth, even if it means suffering, even if it means unto death. That is what every great thinker has done. Socrates being a great example, Christ being a great example of the spiritual side of things. This matters to you as a human being, is because if there's one thing, regardless of what your religion or creed or any of that kind of stuff is, if there's one thing that all cultures agree upon, is that one person speaking the truth, even if it means death, is greater than the mob that gives in to tyranny and totalitarianism. So in one respect, you've got, well, yeah, you've got this practical side of like civic duty and all this kind of stuff. And if we have soldiers that are going and sacrificing their life for your freedoms here, shame on you for squandering them so that totalitarianism can just take root through the political system. But even more so, on a deep level of the purpose of your existence, it is to stand for the truth in a righteous and virtuous way against totalitarianism. But how are you going to do that if you're always looking at Trump as the biggest threat that America has? When now you've got this huge, massive Twitter dump that cost $44 billion, by the way, and you've got a guy who's all about transhumanism. He's the one who's actually pushing this truth narrative while a country that is made up of mostly Christians went and said that this is all conspiracy theory. You guys need to stop acting like everything that's posted on the internet is believable, all these kinds of things. Trump is not the biggest threat. The party is the biggest threat. And when I say the party, I mean those who are pursuing power by any means necessary. And like we talked about in the some of the book club episodes about Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, it starts off with Truman saying, you know, don't act like previous times are better than the time that you have now. There are examples of atrocities that you had to overcome regardless of what time you were in. But we shouldn't look at that and say, oh, well, I guess it's just par for the course. I guess we just have to live in darkness and just accept it. And just, I'm so glad that I have such a good life and that it's so nice and easy for me. Sucks for everybody else, though. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that you should understand that this is the fight that you now have. If it was child labor laws and industrial revolutions and abuse of human rights there, then that would have been your fight then. If it was slavery and you were with William Wilberforce, you would have had to fight that there. If you were in America and you were in the Civil War, it would have been your duty to take up arms and go and free the slaves. That's what it would be. So at the end of the day, and that's not me saying that we're in that situation right now. You always got to have this disclaimer now because somebody's going to say, he said we should take up arms. It's like, no, that's not what I'm saying about right now. What I think you should do is you should at least pick up books like 1984 and reread them and understand what Orwell was trying to get at. And so we have a quote. We have this dialogue between O'Brien and Winston that gets at why you have to understand that what is going on with the Twitter files is a big deal. And so we're going to bring that quote up real quick. And just remind me to get at the idea that Twitter actually matters when we finish this. So this is a torture scene that you're about to read with me. For those who can't see, I have the quotes up. So if you want to read them with me, you got to go to YouTube. But O'Brien smiled faintly. "You're no metaphysician, Winston," he said. He's got a Scottish, I don't know what it is, but we're gonna give it a shot. "Until this moment, you had never considered what is meant by existence." He's got to be evil too, you know. "I will put more precisely. Does the past exist concretely? In space, is there somewhere or other a place, a world of solid objects, where the past is still happening?" "No." "Then where does the past exist, if at all?" "In records, it is written down. In records and in the mind, in the human memories," says Winston. "In memory, very well then. We, the party, control all records, and we control all memories. Then we control the past, do we not?" I'm going to stop now because I can't keep going. "But how can you stop people remembering things?" cried Winston, again momentarily forgetting the dial. The dial is torturing Winston in this situation. "It is involuntary. It is outside oneself. How can you control memory? You have not controlled mine." Clearly Winston isn't married to somebody. But anyway, that's a side note. Not a subtle dig at my wife and my memory. But let me just put it this way. Disclaimer. If you want to learn how much you actually don't remember right, get on a podcast and record it and then get into an argument with your wife. Not saying that's happened. But let's just say my memory's not as good as I thought, but neither is my wife's. So anyway, so we come back. So Winston says, "You haven't controlled my memory." Now, here's the part that people forget about, because it's going to get into the 2 + 2 = 4 stuff. And that is the thing that we want to talk about. O'Brien's manner grew stern again. He laid his hand on the dial, and I think he's electrocuted him or something. "On the contrary," he said, "you have not controlled it. That is what has brought you here. You are here because you have failed in humility, in self-discipline. You would not make the act of submission, which is the price of sanity. You preferred to be a lunatic, a minority of one. Only the disciplined mind can see reality, Winston. You believe that reality is something objective, external, existing in its own right. You also believe that the nature of reality is self-evident. When you delude yourself into thinking that you see something, you assume that everyone else sees the same thing as you. But I tell you, Winston, that reality is not external. Reality exists in the human mind and nowhere else. Not in the individual mind, which can make mistakes and in any case soon perishes. Only in the mind of the party, which is the collective and immortal. Whatever the party holds to be truth is truth. It is impossible to see reality except by looking through the eyes of the party. That is the fact that you have got to relearn, Winston. It needs an act of self-destruction, an effort of the will. You must humble yourself before you can become sane." O'Brien paused for a few moments, as though to allow what he had said to sink in. "Do you remember," he went on, "writing in your diary, 'Freedom is the freedom to say that 2 + 2 = 4. "Yes," said Winston. So, that whole section there is about O'Brien torturing Winston about whether or not he has the freedom to say the truth. Now, it all begins with the suppression, because if you actually read 1984, you learn about the memory hole, you learn about how they're editing things and burning things, and the news cycle is constantly evolving and changing, and they always disregard the previous news cycle so that the new news cycle can come in. And so what happened with the Twitter files is exactly what's been going on in 1984. One might actually make the case, not that 1984 is coming, but that it's already here. Because the Twitter files show that this is exactly what's happening. And for little people like you and me, it doesn't really affect our day-to-day lives. That's true. But what about the people who exposed it? What about the employees and the government officials who are now very, very angry with Elon Musk? And this gets into why you should care, especially if you're a Christian leader in a church or in an organization or whatever, if you're in a leadership position at all. But specifically for those who believe that Christianity is the way, the truth, and the life. Elon Musk has some pretty sketchy transhumanist agendas. Now, if you want to see somebody run from the church into the transhumanist arms of the big tech companies and Elon Musk and Neuralink and all that stuff, and believe me, I've heard them on these Twitter spaces. They are ready to jump into that Neuralink because they are fawning over this guy. Why? Because he showed the truth. He pulled the mask off while everybody else was saying, "You're a conspiracy theorist. You're a crazy person. You're a nut job." And we haven't even seen the COVID files yet that are probably going to be released as well, because we know Twitter suppressed content around COVID also. So, and Alex Berenson's tweet shows that Pfizer was involved in his suppression. So we know that it's got to be in the files somewhere. But what did the country that is a majority Christian, what did all their Christian leaders do, regardless of denomination? What did they all do? The majority of them, and I'm not saying all of them, okay, there's exceptions to everything, but the big names pushed the vaccine. They made people feel foolish for questioning the vaccine. They guilt-tripped them. They implied that they might be murderers if they didn't wear masks in their communications. So we know that the truth about a lot of these things was suppressed on social media platforms. And this brings me to the question of, if Twitter doesn't matter, if social media doesn't matter, if it's just a fun little game for you to post your family photos and just kind of have a good, you know, group chats and things like that about whatever you like, then why is it that the government is willing to use it to suppress information? Why is it that TikTok is something that is a national security issue and sends data back to China? Why do these social media apps matter so much to the biggest governments in the world if they're not real life, if they don't really matter? We should probably stop and pause for a second and think, well, if the people who don't want me to speak, if the people who are against freedom, if the party, so to speak, as 1984 rightly describes it, if the party, regardless of whether that's Democrat or GOP, because the party could be either one, okay? If you read Upton Sinclair, I think it is, It Can't Happen Here?
Lewis Sinclair,
It Can't Happen Here. He actually envisions a totalitarian right that comes in and takes over America. That was his premise. So, I mean, we know that this can happen, regardless of the party's name.
Sinclair Lewis,
there you go. So, at the end of the day, the party is who we are trying to identify. Who's the one that's grasping for power? Who's the one that the CIA is on the side of, and the FBI, and the governments, and the military? Who are they on the side of in terms of leadership? Not in terms of individuals, but in terms of their leadership and what they're doing to suppress human rights of freedom of speech. This matters, especially if you actually care about what people believe to be the truth. Because I don't think Elon Musk is, even though he, you know, appears to have bought Twitter because the Babylon Bee was put in Twitter jail, I don't think he's a friend of Christianity, given what he's actually trying to do with Neuralink and all this kind of stuff. He just seems to be a very systematic thinker in terms of what fundamental human rights actually are. But if you want, again, if you want to see people gravitate towards what Elon Musk believes and keep silent on what's going on Twitter and these tech companies, don't ask the technology people in your churches about what is significant about these social media companies and why they matter so much. Because they do matter. They are the public square. They are to the public square what your iPhone is to your day-to-day life. That's what you have to understand. There are people out there who could not live and do their day-to-day work without their phones. Just look at two-factor authentication. That's the where it's like, hey, thanks for putting in your password, but we need another six-digit one from your mobile device. If you don't have that, you can't get in to your bank, to your email, to whatever. You cannot do it. It has influence on how you do your life. The Twitter sphere is the same exact way. And so this brings us to the fact that most people are not willing to actually stand for something like 2 + 2 = 4. They're not willing to actually recognize that they're in a significant non-shooting war. It's not a hot war, but it is a culture war. And what that means is that there is a fight for what the truth actually is. And as long as people continue to say, well, you know, it's not that big of a deal, you know, these things aren't that, they're not that, you know, enmeshed in the government or in the big companies, well, then it doesn't really matter. But if we're not really willing to actually take stands, real stands, on 2 + 2 = 4, like for example, if you were at work and you had to sign a document that said 2 + 2 = 5 to keep your job, would you do it? I'm not going to answer that question just yet. The question you should ask is, why does my company care about me signing this document? Why does my company care about whether or not I have pronouns in my bio or my signature? Why does my company care what I post on social media? Like, do you really think you have that much influence? The issue is, are we thinking strategically about the times that we're actually in? Because it's very easy to say, oh, well, whatever, pronouns don't matter. I had a conversation with a friend. He said, it doesn't affect you. It doesn't affect you at all. You shouldn't even care. And I said, well, I know people that have lost their jobs because of it. No, that's not true. That's what he said. It's not true. And I pulled up a news article that showed that a photographer was actually getting in trouble with the LGBT community. Because they wanted to take pictures of a gay wedding. And he just said, well, I don't want to talk about politics after that. So the problem is, who does the party actually have? In that situation, he's got my friend. But this is the thing about 1984 and the 2 + 2 = 4. Why does Big Brother care if they can get you to say 2 + 2 = 5 in that story? Because if they can get you to do that, then they can get you to do anything. They can get you to even love Big Brother more than you love God. And you won't even know. That's the message of 1984. It's not that 2 + 2 = 4 is a negligent principle. It's a warning to people to be on the lookout for when the party begins to manifest itself in your own country. Because your military can't stop Big Brother. That's not what happens. It has to be individual citizens, truth bearers, intellectuals who come forward and put everything on the line. Like Szeszwath Miłosz at the end of the book in The Captive Mind. Szeszwath Miłosz was a brilliant writer and poet, and he wasn't able to become an academic in Poland because he would not go along with the Communist Party. And at the end of the book, it says, Mr. Miłosz. Mr. Miłosz. He was a doctorate in his own right. He should have had a doctorate. He should have been a PhD. He should have been a brilliant professor. And he did actually apparently come and teach in California when he was exiled. But he died Mr. Miłosz, as far as I know. But at the time of writing that book, he had no prospects of being able to become the intellectual that he was supposed to become. And so at the end of the day, we have to be willing to take what all these other guys in communist countries did. They woke up and they actually understood, oh, this is that's the party. How are we going to equip my neighbors and my friends to stand strong? Because when the party starts to come in, when it starts to show its head, it doesn't go away in 4 or 5 years. It doesn't go away on the next term, because it's not about the president. It's about the unelected individuals who are in the bureaucracy and able to manipulate big tech companies and big pharmaceutical companies to do what they want and partnering in ways that you can't even elect on, that you can't even vote on. This is the problem. This is why the culture matters, because the culture eventually produces people that end up in those companies and end up in those HR departments. The idea that the real world will educate people is just a false boomer lie that was put forward so that they could remain apathetic about their moral responsibilities to the Republic. And they failed. That's just a fact. Some of them fought, not saying nobody did. But the reality is that all of the things we're dealing with right now, abortion, gay marriage, the freedom of speech, vaccines, all of those things were perpetuated by a generation of people that loved the benefits that the government gave them, and in the exchange, they gave away freedoms that you and I should have. Now, they're still on paper, but a law that's not enforced is no law at all. An unjust law is no law at all. In order for a law to actually have any sort of bearing on a society's behavior, it has to be enforced. And if you aren't if your freedom of speech is not protected, then it doesn't matter. And eventually, it's not going to just be a cake baker or a photographer. It's going to end up being whether or not you can say that from the pulpit, if we're not careful. And that's why all of this matters. Now, that was a long-winded discussion, but I want to get into one more thing before we sign off, which is the Balenciaga gate. And so, if you've got some more time, we're going to dive right into this. Again, make sure you subscribe, like, share, all those fun things. Please make sure you also subscribe on our YouTube channel. We need to get that subscription number up. I know we have a lot more listeners on the audio version. So if you are listening on the audio version right now, before we dive into the Balenciaga stuff, please make sure you go to YouTube and subscribe and click the notification bell so that way we are there. Leave us a little comment saying that you did. We'd really appreciate it. Because as we grow in subscriptions, we get more features on our channel that we can get our podcasts and stuff out. So we'd really appreciate that. So Balenciaga, I never even heard of, which is a high-end fashion company that a lot of celebrities use, which got into a lot of trouble this week. Now there is a story here that was actually shows that there is some movement on this. But before we get into that, just what it was, there was a, we'll pull up the clip. So before we start this clip, Balenciaga was basically decided to do an Instagram campaign with kids and BDSM stuffed animals, which is pretty demented and demonic and evil stuff. Now, at this point, if you have any children in the room while you're watching this, time for them to leave. Bye-bye, kids. See ya. Because this is pretty... We're going to show you some stuff that's pretty demonic. So, continue.
But it's not just the sexual mutilation of children in hospitals. This is part of a larger trend. And the trend is this. Adults crossing the line, and it has always been a bright line, into deep involvement with the sexuality of children. That has always been, and must in a civilized society always be, the most forbidden thing. It's considered unacceptable even among prison inmates. But now it seems to be growing in its prevalence. Consider the latest ad for the clothing brand Balenciaga. This was just uploaded on Instagram. As you can see, the photo shoot they're using to sell their products features a young girl holding a teddy bear in a bondage outfit. Then, in case you missed the point, the photo shoot also contains this image. It shows several documents. Most of them aren't visible, but what you can see when you zoom in, and of course the point is that you see it, is a reference to a U.S. Supreme Court case called Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition. That case struck down a law against kiddie porn. What is this? Well, it is what it appears to be. It's an endorsement of kiddie porn, of child pornography. What else could it be? We wanted to know. So we reached out today to Balenciaga to get their explanation, and they didn't respond. So we're going to have to take that on face value and ask, where's the moral outrage? We have an entire industry in this country comprised of moral outrage merchants. If you've ever been on Twitter, you know what we mean. Truly, an entire sector of our economy is devoted to attacking people for falling short of the mark. And here is a high-end retailer promoting kiddie porn in an ad on Instagram, and nobody notices. There's no boycott. There's no front-page New York Times editorial against it. And, of course, Instagram let the advertisement run, endorsing kiddie porn. And, by the way, if you have an alternate explanation for what this was, let us know. A child with a teddy bear in a bondage outfit and a Supreme Court decision striking down a kiddie porn law? Displayed on the table? What is that? Are we jumping to conclusions? Don't think so. It is what it appears to be. It's right in your face, and no one's saying anything. Again, Instagram had no problem with this.
Great video. But the this is a great question. We just got done talking about the Twitter files, which, by the way, fun fact, apparently Elon Musk is just crushing the child pornography and exploitation on Twitter way better than the previous Twitter team did. We were in a Twitter space, and this is relevant to the Balenciaga stuff because he said Instagram just let it run. Well, in the last, like, since Elon Musk took over, there is a Twitter advocate. She advocates Eliza Blue. I'm gonna try and find her. Yeah, so that we can get people to follow her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got it. You got her?
Yeah.
I'm going to send it to you just in case. All right. Lindsay's going to be my Jamie. There she is. Boom. We're going to change Jamie's name to Lindsay. That's what people are going to refer to it as. You heard it here first, guys. Coming for you, Jamie. Anyway. So this lady was in a Twitter space that Elon Musk was in, and I was in too. And again, if you haven't done the Twitter spaces, it is awesome. It is really cool. You get, I mean... If you do that, you get firsthand knowledge on everything. It's crazy. I mean, Elon Musk was in there answering questions for 3 hours, and then everybody went and wrote about it. So, like, I mean, you're literally in a press conference with Elon Musk, and you can just listen. But anyway, she was in there. She talked about the fact that child exploitation and all this kind of stuff. She actually, I think she has the tweet on there of the 48,000 accounts. No, she's got it somewhere. She tweets a lot, so you probably won't be able to find it. But the point is that she has, you know, 48,000 accounts or something had been shut down in 24 hours under Musk's leadership and his team in the previous administration. That would have taken a month, which is crazy. So she was pretty emotional in the Twitter space where she announces this. Now, again, we're sitting here talking about the party. Yes, Trump is wrong to talk about what he said about the Constitution and all of those things. But at the end of the day, the party is the threat to freedom. One person in an American system cannot, even if they want to, come in and take away your freedoms. If they can, then our system doesn't work, and now we need a new system. But what can happen, and as we've seen happen in other countries like Germany and Russia and others, a group of people can get into the levers of power, because there's not that many levers. Relative to the American people, there's 320 million of us, and there's only a couple thousand government bureaucrats. So, and I'm not talking about the House of Congress and Senate and all that. I understand those are lower numbers. What I'm talking about is the actual employees of the government. So there's no way that, you know, the percentage of people in the government and the people in the regular world of America, there's more people in the real world than there are in the government. That's what I'm trying to say. So at the end of the day, why are they shutting down Hunter Biden's laptop but letting stuff like Balenciaga run? And Joe Rogan interviewed Zuckerberg, and the FBI actually approached him about Russian disinformation and said that, you know, there's going to be a real spike in Russian disinformation. And then Hunter Biden's laptop suddenly drops, and then it's like, oh, wow, well, we better suppress this. So, again, this is all really problematic because, again, why is it that they're so worried about the Hunter Biden laptop, but yet Balenciaga can run these awful, evil campaigns? And let's just look at the lady behind this. Okay, like, this is the kind of stuff that goes out on Instagram and stuff. We're going to show you another person as well who is in the Biden administration. I mean, this is just sick stuff. I mean, look at this. She's holding two bloody babies. Her hands are covered in blood. Like, she's dressed in red. I mean, this is straight up demonic stuff. So how can we sit here and say, oh, man, well, I'm really, Trump's the bad guy. Yeah, I understand he said some bad stuff, you know. But also, for you DeSantis lovers out there, DeSantis hasn't said anything about these Twitter files or Balenciaga, from what I understand. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen anything from him. All I've seen is hurricane relief stuff. So we're not on a track that's going to actually engage the culture unless people like you and me actually start getting on Twitter and tagging DeSantis and say, hey, where's your Twitter files, buddy? Where are you going to talk about this? Because we need to know what he thinks about it, because he's going to probably run for president. So if he doesn't say anything, that's a red flag. That's a big red flag. So we also have this other guy who's a great gem. And did you find him? Is this thing pulled? Oh, it's private now. Okay, well then there you go. See if you can find photos of him while we talk. Is that him?
Oh yeah.
All right, pull that stuff up. All right, again, take the kids out of the room. All right, so this is Sam Brenton. He was working for the Biden administration, and I believe it was in, like, nuclear waste. You can't see his, oh, there you go. That's a nice one. Yep, so that's him with a dog fetish doing some weird stuff. Okay, so I think we get the idea. The point that I'm trying to bring up here, and for those who are listening, he was, had a, I'm assuming a man in a BDSM dog outfit with a dog collar on. Some weird stuff. Okay. Now, for those Christians out there who say Trump is the actual threat, okay, number one, you're talking about one guy. Number two, you've got a political system that is prepared to deal with people like Trump. And on top of that, he didn't get much done anyway. So you already know that the system is against him and can stop him. So, but when we look at the evidence from the Twitter files, when we look at the people that they're hiring in, and this is just one guy, there's another guy out there who's got just as bad of stuff, and if not worse. So my point here is that you have to understand that Twitter and social media and all this stuff does have an impact on your day-to-day life, indirectly for sure, but it does. And part of the reason why we lost the battle of the culture as intellectuals who care about truth, or conservatives who care about truth, or whatever, part of the reason why we lost that was because people started getting quiet on social media. I used to have a much more active Facebook account, and I can't tell you how many times when stuff like this was going on, I was in seminary and I ran a lot of social media accounts for different groups, and so I was always posting on mine about various things, and they'd just blow up. Old friends from college and stuff would jump on there, and we'd start going back and forth and stuff. And I would always get, I always knew I had a good post, not because of how many likes it had or how many comments it had, but because of how often my phone rang about people wanting to talk to me privately about what was posted. And I'm a nobody. So, you know, at the end of the day, this stuff matters, that people will not talk about it on social media. They won't actually voice their concerns and their opinions. But this comes back to the final point that I want to make. When you see the Twitter files, when you see the Balenciaga stuff, you have to understand that there has to be something that you do that's practical, that actually recognizes the time that you're in. And there's a great psalm that and also a passage in Ephesians. So let's pull up the Ephesians passage first that gets after this. So Ephesians 6:10, and a lot of people know this passage, but there's something I want to draw out on it that maybe you don't know. It says, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand." Is that right? It seems weird, that last little bit there. Anyway, it keeps going, and it talks about the belt of truth. And it says, "Gird up your loins with the belt of truth." And what that meant back then was that if you were going to actually put on the armor, you were going to actually put the belt on, you were going to tuck the cloth, the loins, all of the connecting pieces would go into the belt of truth, and the belt of truth would hold the whole ensemble together. But right now, we have a lot of people who like to say pretty words about truth and stuff, but never actually define it. They like to lambaste their people they disagree with as conspiracy theorists, but never actually talk about the conspiracy theory. And then we find out, oh, look at that. Another one that's actually true. Another conspiracy that's actually true. Another one is the aliens. I mean, like, we had a conversation with Dr. Brian Huffling about how the government used Hollywood to actually, and he is doing his master's thesis on this right now for the United States Air Force. And I believe he's finished it and it's done. So yes, I'm getting confirmation in my earpiece that it is done. That they used, and this is public knowledge now, that they used Hollywood to help coax the people or to help warm them up to the idea of aliens using Hollywood. I mean, we know that this stuff happens. And you know how many people lost their jobs because they thought they saw something? Pilots, people who were grounded because they shot at things. People's careers were put on the line because they thought that they saw stuff. I was like, yeah, right, you're a kook, man, if you think that aliens are actually real. And I'm not sure that they're actually real. It's just that UFOs were a real thing. People really suffered. The government knew about it. And they used Hollywood as a propaganda machine in order to help desensitize people to the idea of it. You can go listen to it. UFOs and Religion. It's like episode 30 or something. It's like one of the first YouTube videos we have on here. But the point is that nobody today wants to actually, that's just happy with their life, wants to actually talk about what the truth actually is. Now, obviously you can go off the rails. People get into some weird theories. I'm not saying you have to entertain every single thing. But when your knee-jerk reaction is always conspiracy theory, conspiracy theory, conspiracy theory, you're not willing to provide logical arguments, especially as somebody who's a leader, provide logical arguments to somebody who's getting taken away into conspiracy theory. Well, number one, you're letting somebody go that if given rational arguments might actually change their mind. I've had that happen with people. They started believing something. They started something crazy, and I give them just a rational perspective. I've talked to other people who have done the same thing. We have to recognize the time that we're in, and we have to recognize that we are going to be asked to take some stands down the road, whether that's on marriage, whether that's on freedom of speech, whether that's on abortion, whatever it might be, or pro-life issues, not abortion itself, but pro-life issues, protecting the unborn. These challenges are coming down the pipe. It's not that we are gaining ground in the culture. We're losing ground in the culture. And so we have to be willing to count the cost for what the truth actually, for the value of the truth. And there's a Psalm, Psalm 84, 10 through 12. I think I still have it here. I'm going to race my wife on it. See who's going to get it first. Make sure you use the net so that Jim doesn't get us.
Got it.
Ah, dang. she beat me to it. So I guess she's going to pull it up on the old screen there. And I'll just read it here. Certainly spending just one day in your temple courts is better than spending 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather stand at the entrance to the temple of my God than live in the tents of the wicked. For the Lord God is our sovereign protector. The Lord bestows favor and honor. He withholds no good thing from those who have integrity. O Lord of heaven's armies, how blessed are those who trust in you. We really need to be thinking, whether you're a Christian or not, we really need to be thinking about what we're willing to sacrifice for our freedom to say 2 + 2 = 4. That a man is a man and a woman is a woman. That marriage is between a man and a woman. That feminism is not the ideal situation for women. The radical feminism, that is. I'm not talking about women not being able to vote. You got to qualify everything these days. You can't even complete a thought because everybody's going to think you're crazy. What we're talking about here is the simple truths. The truths that you know. You don't have to have a reason for everything. Your stand for the truth can be a reason enough. But what we can't afford is for people to sit here and think that survival is the answer to the culture war. That ultimately what we're after is just, let's just get to the other side. Let's just make it out in one piece. That is precisely what the party wants. That your survival be your priority, not the truth. And if we look at what Jesus says, anyone who wants to follow me has to be willing to suffer, has to be willing to take up their cross. Somebody's going to say, he didn't say suffer. He said, take up your cross. You can hear him now. And that's what suffering is. It's taking up a cross. Last I checked, you don't see a lot of people saying, hey, you know what? I want to go on vacation. What do you want to do? I want to go take up a cross. Okay. Yeah. Nobody does that. Okay. Unless we're willing to take up our cross, unless we're willing to count the cost, and recognize Christ as an example. That it's better to live off the word of God than off of bread alone. That you shall worship only the Lord your God. When he goes into the desert and he's talking to the devil, and the devil says, I'll give you all these cities. I'll make you ruler. I'll do all this stuff. All you got to do is worship me. And he says, no, I'm not going to do that. And we have to recognize the times that we're in, so that we know the enemy and what they are trying to do. The party is the enemy. They are after your soul and your truth, your stance for the truth. They want to be able to make you say what's true based on what they believe is true, not what actually is true. And as long as you're willing to slander and lambaste and degrade your fellow neighbor for believing something that is questionable about whether or not they should trust the government, that is you being a textbook stool pigeon for the party. Stool pigeon being a reference from Gulag Archipelago. Go read it. So we come to the final section of today's podcast of what should you be doing? What are our plans for 2023? And what I think everybody needs to be doing is revisiting what totalitarian regimes are, how they get into power, and what citizens are supposed to do in light of that. So two books that you can start with, which I do have them right here, is right here in the first circle, right there. And this one is by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. It's a big book, but it's incredibly powerful, very relevant to our time, and also takes place at Christmas. We also have an article up on Solomon'sCorner.com, which we'll put in the show notes, that you can read about some scenes in this from the Christmas story in Russia. It's a very powerful book. Will convict you for sure. The other one is this one. And this is this one. There we go. Conversations with a Dying Man. This is much thinner. It was our family Christmas present to everybody last year. They're going to get a different book this year. And I'm not going to say, because some of them listen to this podcast. But as an aside, some practical advice for all of you. If you have 50 billion nieces and nephews and 30 different uncles and aunts and 75 different families, you feel like you might just be like Abraham's first tribe going through the desert and you're not sure what to get them for Christmas, because after all, you don't have enough sheep for everybody. So what are you going to do? You're going to buy them books. You're going to give them all a family copy. And as a result, you only have to buy like 10 of these things, depending on how many families are out there. So that's what we're going to do. You should do this too. This makes a great gift as well, especially for the times that we're in. It's about a guy who did not take his stand, gets sick, and wants to confess to his, I believe, Presbyterian priest, Samuel Rutherford, and it's about the conversations of his last days about repentance and doing what's right and a warning to people who are in positions of authority and power for not standing for the truth. And then the last one is a movie, and this is Mr. Jones. We're going to play the trailer real quick, and this is a really powerful movie. Do you have the trailer ready, or do I need to keep talking about it? Okay. So here's the trailer. We're just going to play it real fast and just a little bit of commentary, and then we'll close out. Can you turn it up a little bit?
This is my report on the Soviet
question.
Use
a little more.
What's your answer?
That's good.
I don't have one. The Kremlin is broke. So how are the Soviets suddenly on a spending spree?
Paul, I need your help.
Arranging an interview with Stalin.
Garrett, can you pause it real quick?
To reach you.
Go see Walter and do...
So what this is about a journalist from the UK. Well, he's not actually a journalist, spoiler alert, but I'm not going to get into that. But he goes and he's trying to get an interview. He has interviewed Hitler and Goebbels, and he's coming back and he's warning the British about a Hitler offensive, and he believes that he needs Stalin's allyship in order to be able to defend Great Britain against a movement of war from Hitler. This movie is about him trying to get his interview with Stalin and discovering the famines that Stalin artificially created in Ukraine. So, play the clip.
Times. Listen, I really need to talk to you. I found something big. It can break the story wide open.
Paul?
That was his contact in Stalin.
Mr. Durante.
So why are you really here?
I need your help.
This is Ada Brooks.
She's my star. Paul's dead. It's a robbery 3 days ago.
What do you want?
The story no one is talking about.
I saw him. 4 bullets in his back.
And you don't think it was a robbery? What was Paul working on?
Ukraine.
You know how rich this country is, how vast. South is nothing but wheat fields. Grain is Stalin's gold.
I guess the agenda now.
I don't have an agenda, unless you call truth an agenda.
Yes, but whose truth? What will you do when the others come forward?
What's being done here will transform mankind.
We can still do something. No. We cannot let Stalin get away with this.
What do you expect me to do exactly?
The Soviet Union is not the workers' paradise that was promised. It is not the great experiment that you read about in the press.
Stalin is not the man who you think he is.
That's him talking to Orwell.
Are you saying there's no hope?
It's an incredible movie, and touches on all of the major themes that we are currently talking about in this podcast and that you see going around in the world. Highly recommend. They get into the question of, well, who's truth and who should you listen to and what's actually justifies the means? You know, should a couple people die in order to get to the workers' paradise? There is so much that is relevant to this time. And there's one quote that's really good where Gareth Jones is discovering what's going on in Ukraine, and he has connections there. His mom used to be there. That's what motivates him to want to go. And so he bumps into somebody and he says, what happened here? And she says, men thought that they could change the natural law. And you don't see that in a lot of American movies these days. They're kind of all about changing the natural law. And so it's a movie that is definitely a warning. And, you know, if you like George Orwell, Animal Farm, 1984, he makes an appearance right at the beginning. I'm not going to spoil it because it's pretty incredible, actually. My wife and I were sitting there going, oh, my word, this is insane. But I hope that you guys have a great Christmas. I hope that you really enjoy this Advent season, that you take time to reflect on the idea of darkness coming over the land and a light coming into that darkness, because that's what Christmas is all about. And the darkness gets thicker and thicker up until Christmas, and then a shining light appears. And that is the time that we're in. And the darkness just seems to keep on growing. Even though these Twitter files and the Balenciaga stuff has occurred, there doesn't seem to be a lot of reaction. Doesn't seem to be a lot of justice being served. And yet, we still have hope. We still move forward, because ultimately, the way that this applies to the intellectual life, see, I promised it was going to be here, is that we have to be willing to pursue the truth and not give up hope. A generation of people who decide that books and writings and their ideas no longer matter is a generation that's ripe for totalitarianism. But a few people who decide that they're going to take up that banner, whether they have PhDs or not, that they're going to do the best to cultivate their mind and to share that cultivation and the ways that they do it with their neighbors and with those around them, and if necessary, with their enemies, that will also be something that will be a solution to the problems that we're in. And a lot of books on the intellectual life, which we've talked about on this podcast before, this book right here, The Intellectual Life, this was written during wartime in France by a French guy, and talking about how you should pursue the intellectual life. Even if you can't go to school, if God's called you to it, that's what you should do. So, don't curse the darkness. Light a light. Maybe get a halo over your head like we had at the beginning of the show, if you can. But otherwise, thanks for listening. Had a blast. We'll see you in 2023. In the meantime, like, share, and keep thinking.